In one of William Hamilton's most popular cartoons, a man in a tuxedo at a well-appointed dinner table says to his companion, "Money is life's report card." Hamilton has been issuing his own report cards on the rich and social climbers in his New Yorker cartoons and his satiric novels. Hamilton has told many witty personal stories in his commentaries for NPR's Morning Edition. His new novel, The Lap of Luxury, is about a painter who marries into money. But instead of feeling liberated by not having to worry about money, he's miserable. I asked Hamilton if the book is in any way about himself.
I suppose, obviously, any time anybody writes a novel, it's autobiographical in a way. And I have never married a rich girl, but I've certainly thought about it. And I never trusted my motivations. So it was a way of, to exorcise them.
So you thought of marrying a rich girl, never had the opportunity, and now you're trying to convince yourself that it's a lucky thing you didn't, right?
That's exactly right.
So you had the opportunity, is that what you were trying to say?
Yeah. I just never quite trusted myself. I always wondered, I think it would be a very ambivalent position to be in.
Why? I mean, that certainly comes across in the book, but why do you think it would be so hard?
Well, you'd wonder, I suppose it has to do with old sex roles and so on, whether you were the man of the house or a lapdog.
Well, the character in your book thinks that, well, it'll be great and there's all the stuff you don't have to worry about once you have all this money. But on the other hand, he feels like he's ending up being dragged into the ancient family rut by the oxen of his wife's fortune. What kind of rut were you afraid you'd end up in, marrying into money?
The ancient family rut of my wife's oxen. unless they weren't in the agricultural. I don't know. I just have a feeling that the power in a family, you know, its patterns and so on, would go to the richer person.
Are you from money yourself?
Well, I'm from a distant whiff of it. It's pretty funny. I just did a commentary, which you may or may not have heard, a few days ago.
On the sapphire.
Right. And in that, I compared my family's wealth to the Kashmir mines, which were discovered in 1893 and gave out in the 20s. So I have a lot. I mean, I've seen a lot of monogrammed inherited stuff. And my own parents, I always used to say that in their lives, all they bought were food and toilet paper.
Well, did you grow up with the manners and customs of the rich, even if you didn't have that much money?
I guess in a way. I mean, we always ate in the dining room and that sort of thing.
As opposed to the kitchen,
yeah.
Right. That always seemed like a sign to me also. But what did you wear for dinner? Did you change clothes?
We wore simple farm-lack clothes. Didn't dress up much. God. Now, that was a mystery, too. For instance, my father had lots of suits in his closet, and they would allude to some life that he led other than, you know, ranch life, which was obviously work clothes. And you just imagined these suits and spats and walking sticks and opera hats and everything that were in all the drawers as part of a wonderful life that maybe you could get into somehow, but never really managed it.
It seems like it would be almost schizophrenic to, on the one hand, have these really expensive objects around you and have the sense of belonging to a moneyed family, but on the other hand, to not have any money.
That's true. That's true. I remember writing a furious letter home from, I went to Andover, and I wrote a furious letter home of how dare you send me to this prep school where everybody's rich but me. And yet, you know, I liked being there. It was an ambivalence that I suppose eventually, you know, came out as fiction.
What were your youthful ambitions? Did you paint, write?
I got my first rejection as a cartoonist at the age of 12.
That's really young.
Yeah.
What was the cartoon?
It showed two thieves climbing out a window. And I sent it to the Saturday Evening Post. And because of this old inherited life, all our magazines at home were from the 1890s. And it was kind of, you know, I kind of cribbed a cartoon from an old Life magazine. Life used to be a humor magazine, as you may or may not know. It was all full of cartoons. So I sort of redrew one in modern dress.
Were those old magazines around your house the inspiration for your interest in cartooning?
I think so, yeah. They're quite fascinating. They're still there. And the illustrations are wonderful. And I suppose that's why I draw kind of more old-fashioned or something.
Well, you know, your cartoons are very easy to spot in The New Yorker because they're drawn very differently than anyone else's. It's slightly more realistic. The suits are colored in,
right,
which you seldom see in The New Yorker. You seldom see large areas colored in.
I know. The other boys go for the gray blobs. I realized that if you're going to get attention on a page, you have to use a lot of black, because if you look at a photograph, it's almost 90% black, you know, and your eye goes right to it.
Well, that's interesting.
In a newspaper or something. So it was just a feverish attempt to be noticed.
You were described in the New York Times in a book review last week as a New Yorker cartoonist who also writes.
God.
What'd you think of that?
I don't know. The New Yorker cartoonist is a kind of a phrase that it just, you'll never get rid of it. I guess it's like being a former communist or something.
Well, it's nothing to be ashamed of.
No, not really.
I mean, not being a former communist isn't necessarily something to be ashamed of, but I mean, being
true.
A New Yorker cartoonist.
No, I know, but it's an amazingly powerful title, New Yorker cartoonist.
Mm-hmm.
And they say it every time they say my name most of the time.
Well, you are still, in fact, cartooning for the New Yorker. But do you think of your writing or your cartoons as taking precedence over the other?
The thing I like best is writing plays. And I like to write. I mean, it's fun to write a novel. I enjoyed that. But it was mainly because I wasn't getting anywhere in the theater. And now it looks like it's moving again. But that's my favorite of everything I do.
Why?
I don't know. It's just wonderful. For instance, if you write a novel, you can't imagine how thrilling it is to hear every one of your words spoken with an audience sitting around you. You know, you don't get that in writing novels. People say they liked it or they didn't like it, and you can't live through it with them. I mean, for the ego, there's just nothing to beat it.
How did you start cartooning for The New Yorker?
I mailed cartoons in from the Army, and they started to buy them.
From the Army?
Yeah.
What were you cartooning in the Army?
Genteel life. Wishfully, far away in a barracks in Alaska. Yeah.
Do you remember the first cartoon they accepted?
I do. Gosh, I guess it's fairly symbolic. It showed a couple of bums, and they were looking at it. There was an advertising slogan at the time saying, "You have a friend at the Chase Manhattan?"
Uh-huh.
And one bum says to the other, "Not you, Charlie."
So when you came back from the Army, you had more of a steady place at the magazine?
Well, when I got out of the Army, I had won some money in a poker game, and I had $200 from the New Yorker, and I just came to New York with it, and walked in and said, "Here I am." And they were kind of amazed. So they began to give me $100 a week to draw. They weren't necessarily buying anything. And I, you know, drew and drew and worked and worked, and then I discovered it was all a loan, and then I owed them $5,000. And eventually I paid them off. But, I mean, it's a curious place, sort of like an old southern plantation before the war.
You know, on the back cover of your book, The Lap of Luxury, there's a photo of you looking very, very wealthy.
Good.
You're posed with your arms crossed and a very kind of satisfied smile on your face. You're wearing what I guess is a gray pinstripe suit with kind of wide lapels and a little probably monogrammed handkerchief in your
That's
pocket
it.
There.
Yeah.
And there's a very elegant mirror behind you that has something written on it in Latin, is it? I mean, did you really want to give the sense of wealth on your photo?
Well, I try to give it off every day, but I'm afraid there's nothing in the pockets of that well-cut suit.
Now, why do you want to give the image of being wealthy?
I don't know. I guess it's part of my attitude towards life of looking swell and not having any money. It's nice because you don't have the agony of being rich, but on the other hand, you look like you are. Something. I don't know. It's getting away with something, I suppose.
You told us earlier that you had decided against marrying for money or marrying money. If you became independently wealthy by writing, say, fabulous plays or
yeah.
best-selling novels.
That's what I've been trying to do all my life.
So you'd like that, right? You'd
sure.
like to stop yeah. impersonating wealth and actually live it.
Absolutely. Yeah, uh-huh. I'd like to be able to afford myself.
Okay, well, thanks so much for talking with us.
Okay, so long.
William Hamilton's new novel, The Lap of Luxury, is published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux, and you can find his cartoons in The New Yorker magazine. Hamilton is also a commentator for NPR's Morning Edition. This is Fresh Air.